Hello, hello. Welcome back to A Rip in the Veil, your safe place to discuss everything that makes you feel unsafe. And I am so happy to be recording right now. It feels like it has been way too long. It's funny because this is only episode 8, and I'm already in the routine of recording every week, and I actually really started to miss it, and I was really itching to record this episode for several reasons that we'll get into in a moment, but I did want to apologize up front. I am couple days late on uploading this. If any of you live on the east coast of the United States, I'm in the northeast coast, we have had the most ridiculous wind and a lot of storms coming through, trees and branches falling down. Honestly, in my house, it moves the entire house. The whole house shakes, stuff is falling everywhere. And honestly, the sound quality was just going to be so terrible that it's almost like it almost felt selfish to record because I wanted to record, but I don't think anyone would have wanted to listen to that. So I appreciate everyone's patience because I really am trying to stick to a schedule here. Now, like I said, I am excited to record this episode for several reasons. Not only is this a location that I have been to myself, it is also dedicated to a very special person. So I'm very excited for today's episode. I'm sure you already know what it's about because, you know, there's a description. But really quick, I wanted to shout out a podcast I found on Instagram, and actually they reached out to me. We've been talking a little bit, and as a new podcaster, but you know, new to the community, everyone's kind of trying to figure their shit out. I followed a lot of similar podcasts and kind of listened to what they do and gotten, you know, a lot of great inspiration. And these two lovely ladies reached out to me. Their names are Devin and Steph, and they make a podcast called Podcast from the Crypt. And they are really funny. Like, I was actually, it makes me jealous because I don't have a co-host. And honestly, it just made me jealous because they are really funny and they sound like they have a fucking blast making their episodes. And they talk, honestly, a little bit about everything. Obviously, they're funny, but they talk about, like, missing person, serial killers, and paranormal, and, you know, kind of all that stuff. But they also throw in, at least from the episodes I was listening to, some, like, relationship advice and about, you know, they talk about safe dating, which I actually thought was a very interesting kind of subcategory to these missing persons and serial killers that a lot of people don't acknowledge. It's like, especially in this day and age, where people can fabricate, you know, an entire side of themselves and put it online and you fall for it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think it was a very interesting topic to touch on because it absolutely has to do with true crime. So I actually thought that was very creative and innovative of them to include that. So I listened. Okay, let me go back. I actually was just listening to them earlier, so it should be up. It's their third episode, and they're talking about urban legends, and they actually played a little game, which was actually pretty fun. That was actually really entertaining, but it's my favorite episode of theirs because it was kind of like they randomly started talking about water park experiences and negative water slide experiences, and I thought I would share my own because I related to that all too much. Even though I am a string bean, as they would call me, I am a very small person. I am permanently stuck in the body of a 12-year-old. I had my own negative water slide experience that I related to them with, and it has made it my favorite episode. It's kind of gross. It was one of those drop ones where you go really, 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 really fast, and it rode my bottoms up and essentially gave me an enema. Yes, an enema. So you're welcome for that image. I was just very thankful that there was a bathroom nearby. But definitely check them out. They're really funny, you guys. Again, it's the Podcast from the Crypt. And I was giggling like a couple minutes in, and the water slide thing just really got me. So you'll have to check them out to know what the fuck I'm talking about. But without further ado, this is an actually, it's very special episode. It's dedicated to my longest friend other than my sister. She's practically family anyway. We have been friends for 20 years this year. Her name is Sarah, and her birthday was on Wednesday, which I usually would have posted this on Thursday. And since we're not able to celebrate right now due to the whole, you know, pandemic thing, you know, this will just have to do for now. I also ordered a pizza to her house because, you know, if we were hanging out, we'd be eating. So, you know, that's second best right now. She is one of the few people in my personal life that knows about this podcast. And she's been so supportive, like, so enthusiastic, so supportive. And honestly, it's pretty cool to have people, like, excited for you. And she's always been really into history. And she's actually an archaeologist. She has her master's. She's a fucking badass. And growing up, like, I've known her since I was 5. So growing up, I definitely didn't understand, and I truthfully, like, I hated the history classes, but she was all about them. But I've learned, I just didn't like the way that they were presented to me. I'm not a lecture person, and Sarah really helped me with that interest and just the general appreciation. So she's my, like, go-to person for trips and explorations, adventures, and she's honestly like having your own personal tour guide. She's genuinely very passionate about the location's history and the stories and, you know, the lives of all the people that used to live there. Honestly, going on trips with her is part of, I've always been interested in the paranormal. If you've listened to my prior episodes, you know that. But she's part of the reason that I really want to do the history of these locations and these people justice, because she is a huge reason that I kind of changed how I view things in this category. So, with all that being said, today's topic is Harper's Ferry in West Virginia. Now, this information is not going to be anything new to her. Like I said, she is literally like having your own personal tour guide. I think she's actually been able to mentally archive all of Wikipedia's articles and able to pull them at will at random. So she's really fucking intelligent. And she, again, these stories will be nothing new to her. But this is a fond memory I have of us because we have visited it together. She's been herself a few times. But me, her, and her mother always comes along. Obviously, I've known her for just as long. We actually visited Harper's Ferry together during the day a few years ago. While I have yet to go back and do ghost tours, but you know, those as well, it is still just a really cool place to go walk around. So even if you don't get to see the paranormal side of things in person, it's definitely still worth the trip. But of course, especially we're about to find out, you'll definitely get your money's worth out of any tour you do. Before we get started, I have started to post my episode notes on Facebook along with my resources and my mentioned links. I have also created another I think it's because all the spit gets wadded up in my mouth. You guys wanted to know that, right? So I have created another Google Earth project for this episode to provide kind of like a visual aid and like a virtual tour as we go. Until I get my website up and running, this is where I will put all my information that I can't post on Instagram. So it will be on my Facebook links, show notes, resources, because unfortunately, Instagram only lets you post one link and that's the one in your bio. So unfortunately, you are limited there. I am working on a website. And something else I would like some feedback on is I like this virtual tour style. I really, 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 really hope that you guys check out the Google Earth project that I will post on Facebook. They do take quite a bit of time. Not all the, like, some of the locations are hard to find. You know, I was just strolling along on Street View for some of this to find the locations and put them on the map. So please, please check it out. It did take me some time. But I really like the whole virtual tour thing. I think that it provides you guys, like, it really makes you feel more connected to the stories. And just me, as I was making it, I was really enjoying it and I thought it was really cool. So please check that out. But let me know if you guys like that format. Do you like having a virtual tour? Is there anything you want me to change about it? Of course, you can always send me your stories, your comments, questions, concerns, your personal experiences to my email, but I would also love some feedback on the format that I've kind of been doing. So my email again is aritvpodcast@gmail.com. And if it's easier for you, if you already follow me on Instagram, you can go click the email link there as well. Okay, where are we at? 12 minutes? Hopefully it won't be that long when I edit this down. Okay, let's fucking do this. So this is a location where literally you could do an entire episode, five episodes on just the history. So I will try to keep this as concise as possible so we can get to the spooky shit. So Harpers Ferry is at the joining of West Virginia, Maryland, and Virginia, and it's nestled into the fork where the Potomac and Shenandoah rivers meet. As you can imagine, back in the day, this provided a prime location for people to set up shop and do business, and it was busy as fuck. So the location provided the easy accessibility needed to run the first regular ferry in the Potomac, along with being the home to the first railroad bridge across the Potomac and the first railroad intersection in the United States. So that's pretty neat. The ferry itself was out of operation by 1824, and the C&O, which is the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal that runs parallel to the Potomac, was out of commission by 1924. The canal was used to transport coal from the Allegheny Mountains, and that's because it avoided the rapids found in the river, so it provided safer travel for smaller boats. Now, on the Google Earth map, you will see the quote-unquote locks, that's what they're called, along the canal that are within Harpers Ferry. So this is where the boats changed elevation to be able to continue their journey through the mountains. I only included them on the map just so you could kind of visually see how closely all of this is intertwined. Like, if you look at this on a map, which I, again, for the 50 millionth time, I am a visual person, hence the Google Earth projects. If you look at this on a map, everything is like, it's three states, two rivers, the canal. It's like, it's a very, combined that with the railroads, it really is, everything is so closely intertwined and nestled together. So I think that's interesting as well. But that explains why it has such a crazy history. Like most haunted places, some horrible shit happened here. Okay, this prime location is no stranger to bloodshed, and this was actually the only railroad link between the North and South when the Civil War began. And Confederate Stonewall motherfucker Jackson use this to fuck up the railroads by stealing material and essentially dismantling the railroads. Fuck him, right? So, back in 1796, George Washington decided that this was a good place for an armory to be built. Fast forward to the mid-1850s, and this place was churning out weapons by the tens of thousands each year and set the scene for one of Harpers Ferry's most famous events. The armory was raided in October of 1859, and it was led by abolitionist John Brown. His plan was to take over the armory, make a free state, and abolish slavery in America. Yeah, fuck yeah, go John Brown. Well, things went well at first. He had a makeshift army that consisted of a mixed bag, including his own sons, some former slaves, and some fellow not racist whites. They were able to secure the armory, but were eventually all killed, injured, or captured by the militia. And you would think that John Brown is like first on the list of people for them to off, right? Well, plot twist, John Brown actually survived, but he was then hung for treason not too long after. But many think the raid and his trial, like him being charged for treason and then hung, led to the South's secession and the Civil War. So when the war started, Harpers Ferry was burned down by Confederates that were forced to leave by Union soldiers. And by the way, the armory consisted of several buildings, and this was the only one still standing. It's referred to as John Brown's Fort. If you zoom in, I marked it, it's like one of the first spots, like, because you can present, like, do a slide, not a slideshow, but like go literally take a tour of the Google Earth project. And if you zoom in on John Brown's fort, and it's called Arsenal Square, you can see the two other armory's foundations that are left, that are sitting like right in like a kind of U shape. So that's some cool shit, yo. Anyway, so the town laid in post-war ruins, and industrial technology had already changed, and rebuilding proved to be really difficult. So, that is how you will find Harper's Ferry in the present day, with museums preserving what is left of the physical history, and the National Park Service got involved, so a lot of them are government-owned buildings now. So, that's how you will find it today, in 2020. Now, about, you know, it's about 100 years later, not much is left of some of these most influential buildings that shaped not only the time period, but the country as we know it today. Now, that was far from a complete summary of the town's past, but we will continue to explore as we go because literally every stone in this bitch has some sort of historical significance. So, disclaimer, again, these are not necessarily in chronological order because, you know, sightings and paranormal shit are ongoing events, so, you know, whatever. Also, I could not find all of the locations for them on the Google Earth map, again, and some of the locations I did mark are not exact. Most of the dots are purple because it's my favorite color, and these are the more exact locations. The not so exact points are in red. You don't care? Great, let's go. So one of the stories that they tell on the local ghost tour is one of a crying baby that a family would hear every night when they moved into the town in the 80s. Side note, I think most of us can agree that anything paranormal that involves babies or children in general just gives you the fucking heebie-jeebies. Anyway, the dad would yell at this baby to be quiet, and one night he was particularly fed up with that shit, and after rounds of crying, he saw a flash of light after he yelled at it. So the next sound of crying, he yelled at it, and there was an explosion and the sound of brick crumbling. So Rick Garland, he's a tour guide that has been doing this shit for 10 years, said that there was a diary of a girl named Anne found, and she lived in that same building that the dad is hearing the baby crying in. She lived in that same building in 1862 during the Battle of Harper's Ferry. So Anne journaled about a woman who lived upstairs and had an infant that died after a cannonball hit the building. So the same tour guide, Garland, he says that auras are often caught on camera, and he tells his tour guests to keep their cameras handy because weird shit happens here. I actually can't remember he said shit. He probably said stuff, but we're gonna say shit. Shit. Also, revolutionary troops can also be heard still marching and piping away even after being wiped out by cholera. What troopers? Ba-dumps. You guys knew that was coming. Come on. So, I'm just reading my notes, and I actually forgot about this up until this point. Drunk Anna said, "It's 2 a.m. and I'm tapping out. We decided to play a Broad City drinking game, and then I went for a night walk by myself, and then I drank some more. So your girl should probably go to bed." So that's what I did. "Hello, it is the next day, and all of the rum is out of my system." And trust me, there was a lot of rum. So while researching this topic, I found a Washington Post article that was from 1982, which was pretty neat. There's also a wonderful blogger named Teresa who has many blog posts on not only Harper's Ferry, but the entire state of West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. So these articles proved to be very helpful because, surprisingly, some of these buildings really do have limited information out there. I'm sure if you are visiting them in person, the ones that are still open, I'm sure it's a different story, but online, you can't always find that much information. All of those links will be listed below. So, first stop on our tour. I guess it's really the third stop. Anyway, you guys know what I'm saying. The old Iron Horse Inn, it's no longer in use, but it was actually owned by a lady named Shirley Doherty, and she was actually the one who originally started the ghost tours. Which actually originated at that site, the old Iron Horse Inn. When she died, the torch was passed to that Garland guy that we just talked about. So anyway, a Confederate spy was shot point blank in the chest after stumbling upon some Union soldiers. And then he fell down the stairs after he was shot. Employees and visitors have reported doorknobs rattling, stairs rattling, hearing someone fall down the stairs, someone playing with the kerosene lamps, and throwing water at people. This was actually a bitch to find, okay? But eventually I found it with the street view and a picture of, like, the street number, and I strolled along on Google Earth until I found it. So, you're welcome. So apparently, if you go up the steps near the Iron Horse and take a left on High Street, it takes you to our next location, the townhouse. Now, this looked so familiar, like so familiar. I am almost positive that we took those steps and walked right by it. Sarah may or may not be able to confirm that, but I'm serious. Like, I was looking at those steps and I was like, because you can see the top of the steps from the street view if you're on High Street, like on the Google Earth. And I shit you not, we must have walked by all of these buildings. And honestly, when you're in person, it's almost overwhelming the amount of history, but really going through it myself and typing it all out, I really, really, I would love to go back. But anyway, so people hear a boy crying in this area asking for his mother. There was apparently a Confederate boy held by Union soldiers to pretty much do laundry, clean their guns, shine their shoes, and they got rough with this kid, and he fell out of a window to his death. All right, so this one's pretty heavy. You guys ready? Didn't think so. So during John Brown's raid, people were fired the fuck up and just shooting whatever the fuck they wanted out of guns. So some of those things were half-inch long spikes that they wanted to shoot, I guess. Cue the spirit of Dangerfield Newbie, who can be seen wearing baggy pants with a scar, some say it's a wound, on his neck. You see where I'm going with this, right? Well, this poor guy was a former slave and was trying to make enough money to free his 7 children and his wife. Before he could buy their freedom back, oh my god, I could fucking cry, dude. Before he could buy their freedom back, he was hit with one of those spikes in the neck. The fired up racist people in the town mutilated his body and fed him to the pigs in Hog Alley. Fuck, we just can't seem to get away from these people eating people. No, these pigs eating people. Well, people eating people too, but these pigs eating people. Maybe Robert Picton was a reincarnate of one of these fucks. Who knows? But I just hope that Mr. Newby and his family can rest easy one day. Can you imagine being a slave and somehow getting freedom and then you're trying to get your family on, you know, freedom as well? And I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. Next is the story of Screaming Jenny. So there were some storage shacks that were abandoned after the armory became a thing. They just didn't need them anymore. So the not-so-well-off people in the town moved to them. One night, a woman named Jenny caught herself on fire via kerosene and was running along the train tracks toward the station screaming for help. She was hit by a train and killed on impact. Now, in present day, a fireball, essentially, is still seen by conductors darting across the tracks, and they even feel her hit the train. Some have even stopped to see if she's okay, and she's not there. Two words. Heebie-jeebies. So, in the 1970s and 80s, there were a few drownings in the Shenandoah and Potomac Rivers, and like I said earlier, they're known for their rapids. And side note, I can speak from personal experience that there's a lot of rock in the Shenandoah that, depending on how high the water is, you could definitely get injured if you're going that fast, let alone drown, I mean, or get injured then drown. Some friends and I used to camp along the Shenandoah, and we would float in tubes down the river, not the rapids, but you know, And I definitely got scraped up a couple times. And, you know, depending on the water level, sometimes I would just end up walking over a giant slab of rock just to plop down into deep water in between the rocks. You know, so I can definitely imagine that happening. So, somewhat relevant tangent over. Anyway, so the same guy, he always had the same outfit of a checkered shirt and baggy pants, would always report the drownings. When I first read that, I was immediately like, what the fuck, suspicious as fuck, you're a serial killer. But a ranger saw this guy in some old photo and identified him as Masha Pine, M-O-S-H-A Pine, a peddler that died in the 1920s from, you wanna guess, drowning. Hot damn, goosebumps. Thank you for your service, Masha. So in the 1970s, a guy was reported for loitering, and this motherfucker looked just like JB. No, not Justin Bieber, bitches. John Brown. He apparently liked the attention and would let people take pictures with him, and he would never be in the pictures. I'll say that again. Hot damn. Now, I have tried to find one of these pictures online to no avail. If anyone finds it, please email it to me. If anyone knows where I can see it, email it to me. I would love to post it somewhere. I would love to post it somewhere. ARITVpodcast@gmail.com. I will definitely share it. Next stop is St. Peter's Roman Catholic Church. Built in 1830, this was the only church left standing after the war. It was used as both a hospital and a church, and both sides decided to spare it. Some have seen a priest walking along the side of the building and then turning as if going through a door, but vanishes through a wall. Now, the town's founder, Robert Harper, he had a home built in the town, and he feared the British in those revolutionary times. He told his wife to hide all of their gold, but before they could even move in, his wife, Rachel, fell off of a ladder and died before the family even moved in. I said that, didn't I? They didn't move in yet. Okay, you got it. Third time's the charm. So she has been spotted in her 18th century ensemble guarding her gold from an upper window in the house. Our next stop is literally right next door. It's the Wager House. So the Harper and Wager House, like, this is pretty much one large property. And the Harpers didn't have any children. Obviously, Rachel couldn't produce from the grave. So they didn't have anyone to pass it on to, so the property was given to their niece, Sarah Wager. Now, the house has changed hands a little bit due to bankruptcy, and it now belongs to the Park Service, but there are 3, kind of 4, kind of 5 permanent residents there. So there's a not-so-friendly guy that glares at you from the top of the stairs and tried to push a woman down them. The staircase is also home to a woman in a gray 18th century dress and is sometimes holding the hand of a girl that looks to be about 8. Sometimes kid, sometimes no kid. That's why I said kind of 4. Now, the third permanent resident ghost is a laborer that is seen walking in the living room with a body slung over his shoulders. And that's why I said kind of 5. So this building is actually now a library, which somehow feels very fitting. Next stop is the Hilltop House Hotel. And if you're following along on the Google Earth presentation, which you definitely fucking should be, I highly, highly, highly suggest that you go into Street View, because there is a 360 view from this hotel, and it's honestly the next best thing to visiting it yourself. The entire city is so beautiful yet haunting, and this elevated view of the river is no exception. Like, you're literally up, it's Hilltop House Hotel, right? You're literally up on a giant fucking hilltop overlooking the river. So, anyway, back to the ghosts. This building has changed ownership a few times as well, and is now out of commission due to structural instability, and in the past it did survive a couple fires. Now, while it was functioning, the hotel welcomed guests like Alexander Graham Bell and Bill Clinton. Now, various ghostly figures have been seen, and upon the witching hour, which is 2 to 4 a.m. for those who are not familiar, pots bang in the kitchen, laughter is heard, and the furniture likes to redecorate itself and move all around. So, room 66 is permanently occupied by a young boy that died in one of the hotel's fires that occurred over the years. It has also been said that the young boy is also featured in a portrait, or there's a portrait of a young boy in that same room, room 66, and it cries real tears. An entire regime of soldiers, like a pack of soldiers, is said to be seen marching along the street by the hotel, as they did during their Civil War times. You know that Lady Teresa I mentioned earlier that has all the good blog posts? Well, she visited this hotel and went on one of Shirley Doherty's final tours, and she recalls, now this is a direct quote from her blog, the website is going to be linked below, and Teresa says, "Before the tour started, we were walking into the town and we were met head on with a pack of weary soldiers heading in the opposite direction. Not one of those people looked at us or acknowledged our presence in any way. At that time, I thought that they were just some really dedicated reenactors heading home after a day of work. But now that I've learned all these stories about the Phantom Regiment, I'm not so sure." Yeah, girl, I'm with you. I wouldn't be so sure either. But anyway, pretty cool shit. Now, if you head west along the Shenandoah River, you will happen upon the Haunted Cottage. It is also known as the Booth House because John Wilkes Booth frequently visited there when he was an actor, you know, before he was a presidential assassin. Fuck him as well. This location is permanently closed, but it was investigated by numerous paranormal teams. It is no stranger to disembodied footsteps, voices, singing, clothing and hair getting pulled, and all sorts of mists and orb things. There's apparently a little boy that haunts the cellar, and he gravitates towards a bike that is down there, and sometimes he will make contact. And one of the websites I have linked below, they were talking about, it's a paranormal team, and they were talking about an EVP they got with him. So, as predicted, a town as war-stricken as this one is saturated with souls that will never rest. Ghost children are, again, creepy as fuck, but I mean, also really sad. I mean, would any of these spirits still be there if they hadn't died so tragically, or in some cases so young? If you're ever able to, do pay Harper's Ferry a visit. Like I said, it's beautiful during the daytime. And I mean, even if you don't go on a paranormal tour, even if you're not, even if you're not into the ghosty shit, which I don't know why you're here if you're not into the ghosty shit, but either way, it's definitely a good place to visit. Even though we did just go on a virtual tour together, it still definitely just does not do it justice, even though Google Earth has some amazing street views. It really just can't compare to the feeling that you get in a location like this. It just all becomes so much more real, you know? I certainly hope that Sarah and I return one day to make some more memories here and immerse ourselves, okay, let's be honest, drown ourselves in the overwhelming history of this place. Do you guys like the virtual tours? Again, please leave me some feedback. I would love some feedback. Again, my email for the 50th time is aritvpodcast@gmail.com. Send me whatever you want, questions, comments, concerns. I would love it if you guys sent me some personal stories, because I would love to do like a episode of you guys, you know, reading your story. So if you want to be featured in an episode, please, please, please send me your stories. Please send me a topic you want to hear about. Please let me know if you like having a virtual tour. Did you guys go on this Google Earth presentation with me? If so, please let me know. My Instagram is aritvpodcast, and my Facebook is the same, and I will let you guys know when my website's up and running. But again, the happiest, now super belated birthday to my dear friend Sarah, And until next time.